fuck you! Australia! Germany!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, Titanic Tuesday on the horn for this, the 9th day of August, 2016. Titanic Tuesday, yes indeed. And we will celebrate it in rare and formal fashion in short order. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump in and be part of the multimedia madcap zany real-time extravaganza that is the chat room during the live hours of the program from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. There you will be met by Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Laborman, Sentient Being, and V.T. Blom, Vermont Blom, as well as longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, elects yet not to fold space and become Man Cave. 97 degrees, just ambiently out there in the Arequine areas of Northern California. That means it's about a million inside the man cave. Right, exactly. This is a listener-supported program. I want to make sure and get thanks out to our overnight subscribers, Chris, and, of course, Brother Deacon Gerald, Chairman of the Building and Grounds Committee, and Khalil. Thank you, all three of you, very, very kindly. Thanks to you. Instead of needing to raise, we've got it down to $220 fundraising for this evening, and that's where subscribers come in. If you'd like to be a part of the not quite fearsome 400, or the thrifty 300, or the terrific 200, or the wonderful 100, which we haven't yet reached, you can be part of reaching those numbers. Just click that little box at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com under the tab Contribute where it says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. And when you do that, you will become, in fact, a monthly subscriber, and you'll be a big part of helping us make sure that we make our monthly fundraising goal and keep this little popsicle stand going, as in broadcasting, as in on the air. Yes. So thank you very kindly to our subscribers, and I hope there will, in fact, be more, because it helps keep us out of a hole when there's a hole that needs filling in. Thank you again, very kindly. So, yeah, we got $220 to raise this evening. That's one at 220, two at 110, four at 55. 8 at 27.50, and I'm not going to try to do 16 because it makes my head hurt. But that's, 22 at 10, 10 at 22. Hopefully we can do this. Hopefully we can do this and stay out of the hole as we move through this second full week of broadcasting in the month of August. Renamed, I might add. Renamed back in the day. Because this was the birth month of young, scrawny Octavian, who would go on to become Caesar Augustus, the grandnephew of Julius Caesar. Yes. And that's why July is July and August is August. And then we go back to September, which is reflective of the number 7, which tells you a little bit about where the year used to begin back before we had to celebrate the circumcision of baby Jesus as New Year's Day. That's part of the New Year's Day shtick. It is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday is reserved here for celebrations of Titanic right-wing intellect. It goes back to a day long ago when Jim was listening to right-wing radio, homemade, over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. When he heard one Steve O'Brien's, one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, call and ask, how come it is that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia because we ain't nowhere near the beach? To which, in a monotone that could make a freight train take a dirt road, the said wingnut responded, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. I mean, Lurch on the Addams Family was more expressive. Because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic tableside waffle iron. It's a very, very full dining room. So that's, you know, that's Titanic Tuesday, and my God, this could be like the Titanic Tuesday. This could be the one that crosses that just sets the standard for all future Titanic Tuesdays to come. Because today, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, the orange tomato bug, the T-Rump, the man who would be president, he alone can fix this. He alone can save us, as he has told us. He took presidential campaigning to a new level. Please believe me when I say that that level is not an elevation of our political discourse. Let me see if I've got it handy here, and you can know what I'm talking about. Then again, you probably already know what I'm talking about, but still, just as a historical record of what we're dealing with here, he was blathering along in his blathery way in North Carolina today, speaking to a group of mostly grumpy old white people. When he said this.
And by the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
now, what do you take that to mean? See, I remember when Sharon Angle out in Nevada was talking about people availing themselves of Second Amendment remedies. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I forgot about that part. Mm-hmm. And Sharon Angle back when we all knew what Second Amendment remedies meant. Sure. Dylann Roof a year ago in South Carolina availed himself of some Second Amendment remedies and ended the universe, the known universe, for 9 human beings. And almost daily, we have news of someone experiencing a Second Amendment remedy. kind of mark this day. This is sobering. And not in a good way. Because, you heard it. I don't know what to do with this. I really would prefer that we had some group dynamic kind of conversation about this, because I got nothing here. One nominee for the presidency called for the murder, or at least, you know, the shooting, the maiming, the crippling, sufficient to, you know, get her out of the race, of another presidential nominee. As Brother Deacon Asa out in Vancouver puts it, the shrub managed to swift boat John Kerry back in 2004. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini wants to Giffords Hillary in 2016. And some of this, I think it would be dishonest not to note, has an air of the chickens coming home to roost about it. It was 2008 when Hillary Clinton was asked, I'm sorry, I did that wrong. The devil was asked why she was staying in all the way through the California primary, and she said, well, you know, anything could happen. I mean, you know, you remember what happened after the California primary in 1968 to poor Bobby Kennedy. Poor Bobby Kennedy. Be terrible if something like that happened to Barack Obama, but I better stay in the race in case it does. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but yeah, she... And she caught some serious hell for that. Because it's not nice to even intimate that maybe one might profit by having one's opponent obliterated from the face of the earth. But that's what happened today. And see, here's the problem. The people he was talking to are the people with all the guns. I mean, if something like this had happened at a Bernie rally during the primaries, there would have been monumental conniptions. Nothing like this would have happened during Bernie's campaign. At most, maybe the burners would have made a couple of extra really mean-spirited signs, or suggested she needed a proper talking to. But this is awful. Now, of course, by way of walking it back, and he never apologizes for any of the evil shit that he says, but by way of walking it back, he said, no, I was talking about Second Amendment voters, that they could stop her with their votes. Oh, come on! Really? Nobody believes that. And he knows nobody believes that. It's just, you know, it's a fig leaf. The Clinton campaign has, of course, responded in truly, truly stern and stirring fashion. Campaign manager Robbie Mook said, "This is simple. What Trump is saying is dangerous. A person seeking to be the president of the United States should not suggest violence in any way." By God, you told him, Robbie. I mean, he probably didn't get over that for milliseconds. And, you know, I was just sort of checking around, looking for the big list of people who went, okay, I mean, I endorsed him and everything, but that's a call for assassination too far. I mean, that's just intolerable. I'm withdrawing my endorsement right here, right now. No getting around it. I'm just doing it. Yeah, no, that list doesn't exist. John McCain? Uh-uh. Sorry. Nothing will make John McCain withdraw his endorsement of a brother Republican. And all the rest of them, as I noted in a post from our buddy Beth in Dallas, I guess you saw where P. Bush, that's what they call him, P., son of Jebbia, encouraged Texas voters to vote for, you know, the psychotic orange menace. And as the quote over at Beth's post put it, never go against the family, Fredo. It's awfully lonely in that rowboat. Yeah, you know what I do to catch a fish? I say a Hail Mary. Boom! But yeah, he did, and but you know that family, the Bushes, they are so weird, and so pathological, and so twisted, and so sick, and there are so many resentments and internal hatreds, and I mean they're more twisted than guts, and so and remember, P is one of the ones that Gammy Bush, Barbara Beautiful Mind Bush, referred to in 1988 as the little brown ones. Yes, that's my son George W. and those are his two lovely daughters, and that's my son Jeb and his wife, and well, those children of theirs, I call them the little brown ones. Mm-hmm. But there you go. They're spinning for all they're worth in the T-Rump campaign. No one has withdrawn their endorsements that I can find. And I won't be waiting for any of that either. And give it a little extra time. He'll dog whistle again. Sure he will. Over at Raw Story, Eric W. Dolan writes, even conservatives are appalled that Trump said Second Amendment people could stop Hillary. That's John Podoritz, Ben Howe, Ben Shapiro, Noah Rothman, Norman Ornstein, Leon Wolf, Charles C.W. Cook, Steve Deese. Mm-hmm. On and on and on. You'll notice there are no names of any Republicans who have endorsed him there. As Sparky notes in the chat room, a reporter asked Vice Presidential candidate Mike Pence of deep and abiding Christian morals if that was if that Second Amendment remark was an advocation of violence against Hillary Clinton. Mike Pence looked right in the camera, and being a Christian and therefore a very, very capable liar, he said, of course not, of course not. Well, what the hell does it mean then, Mikey? The Second Amendment, people. Because, see, here's how that justification falls apart. There's no data to suggest that they weren't going to vote in the first place. Gun owners go out there and vote as early and often as they can, because they're convinced that somebody like, oh, I don't know, a Kenyan Muslim usurper is one of these days going to come and take their guns. So they already vote. I mean, if that was what that was all about, then why not say, and the only way you can stop her, folks, is to vote and make sure your friends vote and your neighbors vote and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We've got to overwhelm her, people. We've got to defeat her, blah, 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 blah. That's not what he said. That is not what he said at all. I mean, there's really, really just no getting around it. And, of course, it was done in the context of the right of the president to nominate judges to the federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court. I mean, you know, just one more time here.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know, But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day. If Hillary gets to put her judges, right now we're tied. You see what's going on. We're tied because Scalia, this was not supposed to happen. Justice Scalia was going to be around for 10 more years at least. And this is what happens. That was a horrible thing.
What was a horrible thing? That a septuagenarian with terrible diet habits, no exercise and whatnot, and a penchant for right wing proto fascist Roman Catholicism, went by himself to a hunting preserve and died in his sleep. I mean, even that contains a whiff of conspiracy. It was a terrible thing. It was a terrible thing. He was supposed to be with us for 10 more years. Says who, dipshit? By what metric? By whose order? What, he just happened to die in Texas so that we couldn't hook him up to life support, some sort of life support system, and then just Jonathan Pike him onto the court, you know? Tony, beep once for yes and twice for no. Green for yes, red for no. Beep. Christopher Pike, not Jonathan, damn it. I ruined our first obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening. Beep, beep, beep. Is there anything in that clip? I mean, it goes on. There's a bunch more.
So now look at it. So Hillary essentially wants to abolish the Second Amendment. Now, speaking to the NRA folks, who are great, I'll tell you, so they endorsed me. They endorsed me very early. My sons are members. I'm a member. We can add, I think, the National Rifle Association. We can add the Second Amendment to the justices. They almost go, in a certain way, hand in hand. Now, the justices are going to do things that are so important, and we have such great justices. You saw my list of 11. that have been vetted and respected.
Yeah, including the one who was sending around naked pictures of himself to gay porn sites. The guy from Alabama, but we won't talk about that. I mean, it's just not, it's not doing. Was there even any meaning in any of the last several seconds of dialogue? Oh, we got great justices. It still comes across the way it came across. He called for the Second Amendment people to do something about Hillary Clinton. And, you know, history has other examples of this, although they may be apocryphal. What comes immediately to mind is, of course, Henry II sitting around having a joint of roast beef with his barons when he was being bedeviled by his former buddy, drinking and whoring partner, Thomas à Becket, who had become Archbishop of Canterbury. And you know, in between chomps off the haunch, Henry II is alleged to have said, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?" And so, taking their cue, a group of barons did, in fact, go into Canterbury Cathedral as Thomas à Becket was a saying of his prayers and, you know, murdered the daylights out of him. This is that. And, of course, at the heart of this is the claim that, and he keeps, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? And Texas Betsy says, generations of altar boys have been saying the same thing. Oh, that's cold, Betsy, that's cold. But this whole thing is, you know, and it's couched in terms of, it's couched in bullshit terms.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way,
notice the weasel word. Essentially abolish the Second Amendment. And I guess some of the people in that room who in their day-to-day lives live under bell jars and things like that, I guess they believe that. It goes without saying, however, that no president can abolish any constitutional amendment. At all. In any way. It takes congressional action to repeal an amendment. There's, of course, a historical precedent there for the repeal of prohibition. Yes, of course. Meanwhile, Dwayne in Frakistan writes and says, proof what Trump meant was in what he said next. All the replay videos, Dwayne says, truncate the quote too soon. It's what he says next that removes all doubt. Roughly quoting, there's nothing you can do, folks, although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is. Then he says, that'll be a horrible day. Was he saying the NRA getting involved would be a horrible day, or the gun nuts? Hardly. Yet every Trump stooge is saying that's what he meant, and they're getting away with it. That's probably not what he meant. The only context I can think of in which the Second Amendment reference squares with that'll be a horrible day is assassination. All right, well, let's check out Dwayne's theory, shall we?
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, That will be a horrible day. If Hillary gets to put her judges, right now we're tied. You see what's going on. We're tied because Scalia, this was not supposed to happen. Justice Scalia was going to be around for 10 more years at least. And this is what happens. That was a horrible thing. So now look at it. So Hillary essentially wants to abolish the Second Amendment. Now, speaking to the NRA folks, who are great, I'll tell you, so they endorsed me. They endorsed me very early. My sons are members. I'm a member. We can add, I think, the National Rifle Association. We can add the Second Amendment to the justices. They almost go, in a certain way, hand in hand. Now, the justices are going to do things that are so important. And we have such great justices. You saw my list of 11 that have been vetted and respected and have gotten great. Okay. And they a little bit equate. But if you don't do what's the right thing, you're not going to have either you're not going to have a Second Amendment, you're not going to have much of it left, and you're not going to be able to protect yourselves, which you need. You know, when the bad guys burst into your house, they're not looking about Second Amendments and do I have the right to do this? Okay? The bad guys aren't going to be giving up their weapons. But the good people will say, oh, well, that's the law. No, not going to happen. We can't let it happen.
You got that? Yeah, I do too. One more thing before I just completely wear this clip out. And if there's a benefit to what we do here, and that is that we have time to go deep on stuff like this. They couldn't play this over and over again on the for-profit media. We can. Because I want to further prove the point that nobody misunderstood what he said there. One, this is being said in North Carolina. It's a kind of a trigger-happy place. One might remember historically that it was a group of good old boys from North Carolina who blew away one Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson and at the same time blew away whatever chance of any kind of negotiated settlement the South might have had in the Civil War. This happened at Chancellorsville. Yeah, they shot their own general. North Carolinians did. And, you know, they have firearms things all the time there. Firearms problems. But God almighty, Trump makes it sound like it's just Mad Max on the Outer Banks. When the bad guys come into your house. How often does that really happen in North Carolina? Because it really doesn't happen that often anywhere else in the United States. There's not a daily list of home intrusions that have been foiled by dedicated Second Amendment remedialists. You simply put, the data are not there. But one more thing, okay? We're going to go back over this, and I want you to pay. I'm going to boost the audio just a little bit. And, well, okay, one more time.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick.
Okay, so you heard how loud the crowd can get. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I mean, it sounds like they're down at the armory for your Saturday night wrestling. Right? Because that's what it sounds like when the Red Marauder meets up with the Blue Masked Marvel, and the Red Marauder's not supposed to win that. Ooh, ooh! Right? So they're kind of loud. All right. Next.
Her judges. Nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what.
Did you hear that? They understood, the Second Amendment people, they can maybe do something. And there's clapping. It's not the Saturday night down at the Armory. They begin to clap. Because there in North Carolina, Stan, they know what they've just been told. That their hope now lies in somebody taking a firearm and doing violence against a nominee for the presidency of the United States of America. It was the clapping. It's the clapping that gives it away. Because even there, a little taken aback, but yeah, we could deal with that. Clap, clap, yeah. Yeah, I guess that would work. It would be worth it to save our Second Amendment. And so a second question obtains, do these troglodytes really believe this stuff? Now granted, they've had it poured in their ears and through their eyes for decades now that the Democrats are going to get your guns. We never have. You had 8 years of Bill Clinton, nobody got their guns. 8 years of Barack Obama, nobody got their guns. It was great for the gun business to say that they were going to get their guns, but nobody got their guns. Do they really believe this? I mean, it's kind of like, never mind the analogy. They know the Second Amendment's damn near carved in stone. They know how Heller is now settled law, stare decisis and all of that business. Every American citizen, according to the Heller decision, has a right to have a gun. With some ability on the parts of states and municipalities to impose limitations thereupon in the form of types of firearms and not letting the mentally ill have guns, you know, if the person purchasing the gun will just kindly check the block that says, yep, I've been adjudged mentally ill, well, then you can't have a gun, Buster. But if he checks, nope, I'm fine. Here's your gun. Heller says everybody can have a gun. And as Anatole points out in the chat room, Obama has increased the places that gundamentalists can carry their Freedom Protector fetish devices. National parks. Yep. So look for a lot of airtime to come out of this. Look for a lot of hand-wringing to come out of this. Just don't look for any accountability to come out of this. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh, who's been on day shift a little bit lately and can listen live again. Hi, Ron. North Carolinians trigger happy, you say? Hogwash! Headline from the Charlotte News and Observer. Shooting outside Raleigh home followed 9/11 call about hoodlums. Chad Cameron Copley, 39. Well, you don't, the name says it all, doesn't it? Chad Cameron Copley, 39, appeared in a courtroom at the Wake County Judicial Center after being arraigned on murder charges in Raleigh on Monday, August 8, 2016. According to police, Copley was inside his garage at 3536 Single Leaf Lane off Mitchell Mill Road, you know, that Single Leaf Lane, when he fired a shotgun. The blast struck Corin Rodney Bernard Thomas, 20, who was with a group outside his home. Copley was remanded without bond. Minutes before, a 20-year-old Raleigh man was mortally wounded outside a North Raleigh home early Sunday. A man called from inside the house to say there was a bunch of hoodlums outside and that he was locked and loaded and going to secure his neighborhood. You need to send PD as quickly as possible. I'm on neighborhood watch. I'm going to have the neighbors with me. There's hoodlums out here racing up and down the street. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. There's some vandalism. Corin Rodney Bernard Thomas had come to the neighborhood at about 12:30 a.m. to attend a party two doors down from Copley's house. His buddy, David Walker of Raleigh, said he and Thomas weren't invited and were waiting for someone to give them permission to come inside the home when somebody they knew told him, "Bro, it ain't no girls." If there were no girls there, we figured we might as well go back home. Not bad reasoning. I mean, understandable reasoning. Walker said Thomas saw what he thought were police lights. He said his friend wanted to avoid a confrontation because, quote, he had a little weed on him. So he took off running toward Walker's Taurus. I'm looking at him running the whole time. I yelled at him, "We good now. Stop running." He turned his head back to me, and that's when a shot went off. We didn't know that it came from the house. We were all looking around like, who got a gun? Shortly after the shooting, a woman called 911 from inside the Copley house. After her brief conversation with the dispatcher, the man who made the initial call came on the phone. We have a lot of people outside our house yelling and shouting profanities. I yelled at them, please leave the premises. They were showing a firearm, so I fired a warning shot, and we got somebody that got hit. Somebody was shot, the operator asked. Well, I don't know if they were shot or not, ma'am. I fired my warning shot like I'm supposed to by law. They do have firearms, and I'm trying to protect myself and my family. Ma'am, I don't know who they are. There's friggin' black males outside my friggin' house with firearms. Please send PD. And then he clicked. There are about 25 people inside the house where the party was. There's been about another 25 outside on the front in the front yard. But there was no fighting. There was no arguing. Nobody was waving guns. Naturally, the newspaper reached out to the grieving mother, Simone Butler Thomas. She had a framed picture of her youngest son. She collapsed when she got to the bottom of the steps of the house. As she sobbed, she could be heard to say, "This is my baby. He looks just like me." And see, that's one of those markers of grief. In the immediate, in the minutes and hours and even days after a death, the people the decedent has left behind will continue to refer to him in the present tense because they just can't put him into the past. He looks just like me. Naturally, being the for-profit media, they have to slime him a little bit. They refer to something that happened to him when he was 16 years old, i.e. a juvenile, but they still splatter it all over the newspaper. Thanks, First Amendment. He was looking forward to helping his girlfriend, Imani Rainey, 19, move into her dormitory at East Carolina University. That's some damn warning shot, ain't it? Yeah, maybe the First Amendment, maybe the Second Amendment folks can take care of that. One little precious moment in the process. He was arraigned by, Copley was, by Wake County District Judge Craig Kroom, who informed him that based upon the charges against him, he could face the death penalty if convicted of first-degree murder. He was given appointed counsel, the public defender there. Being a charge of first-degree murder, he was denied bail by Judge Kroom, who then, before moving on to the next case, looked at Copley and said, "Good luck." Not good luck, but good luck. This guy will, of course, be a martyr for the NRA. Inside his garage, he fires a so-called warning shot with a shotgun. Nice, huh? But, you know, privilege is tied up in that kind of thing. He saw himself as defending his sacred Merkin homestead against a bunch of thugs who were threatening him by standing outside at night. Not on his property. And you know what? You can't use deadly force. Well, used to be. You couldn't use deadly force in defense of property. And hence the old rule about shoot them and drag them inside, and if they get up, shoot them again. Or shoot them if they're inside, and if they get outside, drag them back in and shoot them again. That little gem of advice was passed out to me and my peer group when we were all about 17 years old in 12th grade government class. No, really. I'm not kidding. It was. Hoodlums. I'm sorry. I said thugs. Hoodlums. And so once he had decided they were hoodlums, well, he decided they were going to die. I fired my warning shot like the law says I'm supposed to. Who told him what the law is? Well, Fox did. Hannity did. Maybe the NRA program, or maybe he read it on the interweb tubes, because everybody knows the internet don't lie. I guess we should be grateful that Cameron Copley was even charged at all. Meanwhile, on the further topic of white folks with guns, Eric Eugene Crowell, C-R-O-W-L, describes himself as a constitutionalist. Years old. Everywhere he went, he had a police scanner in his vehicle. And has made a bit of a self-appointed career out of following the police around out in the Portland area, Portland, Oregon. And recording videos of them and tracking their shift changes. In one exchange with police, he called himself a natural-born citizen. He was is a native of Kansas City, Missouri. Blathers on and on and on about how the government's going to how Second Amendment militias has to overthrow the illegal government. So Portland police were kind of had him on their radar. Because you can ask law enforcement all around the United States. They'll tell you the biggest threat to them are these militia types, these skinhead types, these white constitutional sovereign citizen types. So, this past Sunday, he was seen parked outside the East Precinct office of the Portland PD, surveilling them. They walked up to see what was going on. And, in their words, he behaved suspiciously. His SUV was jam-packed. Well, okay, not jam-packed, but had a bunch of weapons in it. He was toddling around Portland with a 5.56 caliber rifle, a 12-gauge shotgun, two 9mm handguns, a magazine drum of 100 rounds of 5.56 millimeter ammunition, hundreds of rounds of 5.56 and 9mm rounds, 5.56 tracer rounds, handheld radios, a police scanner, camouflage clothing, and camping equipment. Because, you know, he loves the great outdoors. Executing a search warrant for his home, they then found 8 more rifles, a shotgun, and hundreds more rounds of ammunition. He's being held on $1 million bond. They arrested him and charged him with attempted assault of a public safety officer, unlawful use of a weapon, and unlawful possession of a firearm. I'm still looking in here, as I previously did, for where the guy is a convicted felon or something. You realize that attempted assault of a police officer is somewhere within the general neighborhood of stream littering. Well, I guess they've chalked that one up as a win. Because they got him before he could kill anybody, but now, once he gets out, they're not going to change any minds. Merca. Like I said, we got a good bit of stuff to work with this evening. Note coming in via email, a couple of them. Steve writes, the T-Man says Justice Scalia was supposed to be around for another 10 years. I guess no one got the memo. Serious, serious egomania here. On the other hand, this stuff would make a good stand-up routine in Vegas, though probably not good enough for top billing at his own casino. Regards, Steve in China. It's not just every day that I get a subject line from Thomas over at FYINation.com that's all caps. But this one is. Subject line, Trump. Bob. Hi, Thomas. The subject line should say it all. I always am more interested in how the audience reacts than what the speaker says. However, in this case, both are damning. I'm no supporter of Hillary Clinton. I'm voting for her because at least she's not afraid of Wi-Fi and vaccines. I'm an asshole. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, when the audience chose not to walk out, when the Congress and RNC chose to allow this to continue on this day, in my not humble at all opinion, they're all complicit in what happens to Hillary if she wins and is elected president. They're setting her up to fail times 100,000%. And it's not on the stuff that she likes, like the TPP or fracking or war. Because they like that. They want that. They're smearing a woman without abandon and are happy to literally execute her. What have we done, Bob? Corporate Democrats have allowed this to happen, and this is the pot we're now pissing in. You can't have no woman, you can't have no black man as president, is what simpler people will see, and place into the hands of social issue politics instead of issue politics that actually are more nuanced. Oh, well, this is what we've become. I have no answers, but I now fear for Hillary Clinton's life as much as I do for Bernie's and Barack's. It shouldn't be this way. Yours truly, Thomas. Okay, I'll field that one. It shouldn't be this way. Why shouldn't it? Oh, really? Why shouldn't it be this way? This is what America has been programmed to be. This is not a boating accident, okay? This is the America that the NRA wants. This is the America that the Republican Party wants. This is the America that the John Birch Society wants. This is the America that the teabaggers want. The birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers. This is the America they want. This is the America they've been building since the election results were announced in 1964. And it pisses me off a little bit because that encompasses my entire life. That they've been building all of this. And no, it's not this way because we don't have prayer in schools. And it's not this way because a woman can deal with a pregnancy for which she is unprepared and ill-suited. And it's not this way because we're not getting back to God. And it's not this way because Barack Obama wants to get your guns. And it's not this way because some of us acknowledge science and know what's happening to the temperature of the planet. And thus, the planet's ability to support human life. It's not because of any of those things. It's not because of tax and spend Democrats. It's not because poor people have a tiny little itsy bitsy obscene pittance to eat every day. It's not because they can go to the doctor. It's not because a black man can marry a white woman or a white man can marry a black woman. It's not because two guys can get married or two women can get married. It's not because of any of the things that the right wing rails about, hammer and tongs, day in and day out, every damn day of the year. It's not because we're not saying Merry damn Christmas, starting somewhere around the 4th of July. It's because this is the America they want. This is the America they designed. This is the America that they conceived in order to try to maintain a death grip on political power for the sake of political power, not for the sake of the good of the union, not for the sake of the well-being of the country, not for the sake of national security, but for their own naked, unabashed lust for power. Period. It's what happens by design. Thank you, Jack in Shreveport. Jack in Shreveport says it's also not because of the breakup of the black family stuff. Nope, sorry. It's not because women are in the workplace. It's not because women stay home to try to raise their children. Okay, Marty, I'm with you. But, Bob, it is the fault of those groups you're naming. Remember, the party of personal responsibility can never take any responsibility for anything that doesn't go perfectly their way. Duh. Trump didn't just come out of nowhere. No matter how hard the for-profit media try to make it look that way and argue that, no. These are seeds that have lain in the ground since 1964. These are seeds that were sown on the wind by Richard Nixon and his cronies with their Southern strategy. These are seeds sown every time Ronald Reagan mentioned welfare queens. Damn right. But somewhere, somebody is still surprised that Donald Trump would say something like that. Shocked. Shocked, I tell you. Shocked. David in South Carolina notes under the subject line, lethal force. South Carolina has changed the law so that it is now legal to use lethal force to defend property. Several cases have already gone to trial and property owners prevailed each time. You would think that armed bands of marauders were loose
in the land. When in point of fact, the only place they're loose is in the fevered imaginations of people who have been told every day of their lives to be afraid of the other, the different, the strange, the not them. All Cameron Copley had to do was close his goddamn garage door and go to bed. That's all he had to do. But you see, he's had his head filled with nightmare visions of people battering down their doors. And, you know, there are those kind of people. So God only knows what they're capable of. Right? Sure. Okay, so it's 6 minutes past the hour. And, that will end the filibobster, at least this portion of it. You know how to reach the program if you wish to get involved. The stress line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. The stress line is 304-663-4676. It's always best not to try to use a speakerphone with that. You can also reach the program, 304-574-8178. And by Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never sent me a contact request, feel free so to do. And I will look forward to our conversation. That's why we call this, you know, conversation radio. So, any way you want to go about it is fine. And I'll remind you, we have $220 to raise this evening at 8 minutes past the hour, 8 minutes into the second hour of the program. We are still at zero. Hopefully it will not stay that way. You know how it goes, 10 at 20, 20, 22 at 10, 10 at 22, etc. And that's how we stay out of a hole, and that's how we get the bills paid, and there are bills waiting to be paid. And hopefully that will happen. So yeah, a little break. It's also Tuesday. Being Tuesday, that means we have the Green News Report coming up, which I always look forward to, with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Listener-supported conversation radio is what we do here. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Trailer love. Trailer love. She's my trailer love. Single wide. Chicken fried. Mister, we know how to live. Come on in here, have a beer. Sticker in our window says fear this. Trailer love. Trailer love. She's my trailer love. Gonna go out drinking. She's gonna fix her hair. She's gonna wear that sweatshirt with the teddy bears. Trailer love. Oh baby, she's my trailer love. Now walking home we got into a fight about our microwave. Then we saw the sign that said Jesus saves. Now we're saved. Found our way. One man and one woman in trailer love. No more drunk and saney. Now we're Bush Cheney. Sticker in our window says fear this. Trailer love, trailer bliss.
It's Tuesday, August 9, 2016.
The Olympic rings have made their way to South America for the first time in history.
In the Rio Olympics opening ceremony, Brazil goes big on global warming and the environment. U.S. government to use global warming litmus test for all new projects. Melting Arctic ice uncovering anthrax and toxic waste. Happy Earth Overshoot Day. Plus,
the families say there's no plan if something goes wrong.
Florida gets approval to release genetically modified mosquitoes.
What could possibly go wrong? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The ceremony itself was as spectacular as you'd expect, featuring everything from fireworks to plants forming the Olympic rings before having a full-on plant-gasm.
Yeah, kinda. This is your Green News Report.
If people in that stadium start giving birth to palm trees in 9 months, you will know why.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I didn't watch the opening ceremony from the Olympics live. I taped it, but boy howdy, I knew something went on when I started receiving texts and tweets and everything else that, oh my God, global warming has made it into the opening ceremony.
I know, and we will have more on that spectacular focus at the Rio Olympics in a moment. But first, Brazil and the United States are both grappling with the spread of the mosquito-borne Zika virus, which is linked to serious birth defects. Here in the U.S., the Centers for Disease Control has issued its first ever domestic travel warning, warning pregnant women to stay away from certain parts of Miami, Florida due to the risk. Now the Food and Drug Administration has cleared the state of Florida to release millions of genetically modified mosquitoes after a similar program successfully reduced mosquito populations in small trials in South America.
Robosquitoes?
Something like that. Now, Florida residents are naturally wary of the GMO mosquitoes.
The families understand the effort to fight Zika and other mosquito-borne diseases, but they're dead set against using this neighborhood and their children in an experiment with genetically modified bugs.
They will have an opportunity to vote on whether to proceed in November. And of course, scientists warn that global warming is expanding the territory of the species of mosquito that carries the Zika virus. Monday marked Earth Overshoot Day. That's the point in the year when humans have extracted and used up more natural resources than the planet can regenerate in a single year. Things like forests and fisheries and raw materials. According to the Global Footprint Environmental Group, this year is the earliest Earth Overshoot Day ever, 5 days earlier than last year. The Obama Administration White House Council on Environmental Quality has ordered federal agencies to include climate change impacts as a factor when deciding whether to approve major infrastructure projects.
Good for them. That took long enough.
I know. That is the same sort of litmus test that President Obama used to reject the Keystone XL pipeline. Of course, the rule now faces likely court challenges and potential legislation blocking it from the Republican majority in Congress. Some bizarre news, the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, and all of that melting ice has exposed two new threats. In remote Siberia, where temperatures this summer hit a record 95 degrees Fahrenheit, scientists believe that dormant anthrax spores have been released from melting permafrost. That's killed at least one person so far and infected nearly a dozen others. Scientists say anthrax can remain frozen but viable for decades.
Jeez.
In Greenland, melting ice is threatening to release frozen toxic waste from an abandoned World War II-era U.S. military base called Camp Century.
You know, this entire Green News report sounds like three terrible science fiction movies all mashed up.
Yeah, well, this facility was literally built under Greenland's ice sheet, which is, of course, now melting.
Oh, man.
Scientists at the University of Colorado in Boulder warn that as the planet warms, toxic waste that was once safely stored at the site, things like PCBs, sewage, radioactive wastewater, diesel fuel, those could all be exposed and eventually released into the local environment.
Unbelievable.
Finally, the opening ceremonies of the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, on Friday were the first ever Olympics hosted from South America, and the centerpiece of the spectacle was a call to address global warming and deforestation.
The heat is melting the ice cap. Look at Greenland in the last decade. It's disappearing very quickly. When the ice melts, the level of the sea rises.
What a challenge for the coastline cities.
Dance and music were incorporated with visualizations of scientific data showing rising global temperatures, melting ice, and rising seas. And each Olympic athlete carried and planted a seed of hope from a native Brazilian tree that will eventually grow into a forest. It was likely the most widely watched warning on climate change ever broadcast in history.
Yeah, probably the most science that has been on network television in Lord knows how long.
That too.
Can't imagine anything like that in an opening ceremony in an Olympics held here in the U.S.
No doubt.
Very cool. For much more on that story and all of the other ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Isn't there a little bit of the Olympic fanfare? Isn't there a little bit of more than a little bit of passing similarity? But no, Canada, da da da. Well, I don't know. Let's go over to the Skype line and check in with Thomas. What's happening, Thomas? Oh, Thomas.
It usually helps if I unmute properly. Sorry about that.
You really can't overestimate that.
I know, right? You really can't. First of all, if you don't mind, Betsy in Kansas was on Morning Jules this morning. And
no, Betsy's not in Kansas. Betsy's in Texas.
Or Texas. Texas. Same, you know, crazy Republicans. But a different state. And people should really check that out. And I will have access for, if you go to soundcloud.com/FYI-nation, you can listen to that. But that's not why I called.
No.
I actually called, I didn't want to give a shout out to Jules because that was a great interview. But that said, I called because I want to talk about audience and how audience reacts, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
Because I focus on this a lot, because not just on my show, but in general, because this is like an atmosphere thing. Like, if you watch the, I used to do this for shits and giggles. I used to watch Benny Hinn because, you know, who doesn't love a guy who can cure you with an Armani suit? I mean, come on. Who doesn't love that? So I used to watch him, and I would watch how they would, he would get you, the whole thing is about getting people riled up subtly. And that's kind of what Trump is doing. And I was looking at this.
That's also what's been going on since right-wing talk radio became a thing.
Yes, exactly. You get them to fever pitch. But this is like with church. This is like with anything. You get them to fever pitch, and then you get whatever you want out of it. Like in Rush Limbaugh's case, where he was given thanks by Newt Gingrich for the Republican Revolution, right? You get, the whole point is to get them to a point where people aren't willing to think for themselves anymore and actually think that, oh, Benny Hinn just cured somebody by the
or you know, the means by which Richard Nixon convinced a lot of rock solid Southern Democrats to, you know, vote for, and George Wallace coined the term the silent majority, I think, wasn't it? And then yeah. And then Nixon bogarted it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
And that, to me, the study, I really wish, because this is, somebody wrote an article, I think it was Rostery, talking about how Trump supporters are like people in a cult. And then it hit me. That's exactly it. Facts don't matter. Reason doesn't matter. If you want to tell them the sky is blue, they'll tell you the sky is green because Trump said so. Or the sky is just rigged because the whole system is rigged. And what he's doing is what the right does on a regular basis, whether it's Alex Jones or Glenn Beck. They take a moniker of truth in their argument so you can say, okay, yeah, that's sane. And then they go batshit cray-cray on it. And these guys all seem to fall. And that's what I meant when I wrote you, and I was like, how do we get here? And that's why I'm glad you talked about what you did, because that's the only explanation for it, because it's self-determined, because this is self-fulfilling, because this is what they want.
Well, but you can't make people do things. There's an old saying about hypnosis. You cannot hypnotize someone to do something against which they are morally opposed. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't hypnotize somebody to go and commit a murder.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
If they're morally opposed to it. But with that having been said, if you're, you know, the genius of right wing hate, Thomas, is that they knew this stuff was laying there dormant. These hatreds, these resentments. And they knew it was there to be tapped. They haven't, the right wing have not made people believe things that they didn't already believe. They have awakened it and made it acceptable to manifest publicly. It's always been there. I mean, the elect, you know,
we deluded ourselves to a certain extent as a nation. We conned ourselves. We engaged in willing disbelief, and we tried to pretend that we had made great strides in race relations, since 1963 or 1954 or 1865 pick a date.
Yeah,
but we haven't. We haven't.
A lot of this.
There's tremendous resentment that has just simmered under the surface in white America, especially white underclass, undereducated America, that goes back to things like Brown versus Board of Education, and lunch counter desegregation, and everything that was a hallmark of positive change in this country. There has been deep and abiding resentment of it, and consequently, when you get somebody who is good at giving people a pass, if you will, to manifest it, well, they will.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, just think about technology and how that adds to this. You're never away from the group, the pack that you want to be, whether it's Trump supporters or Bernie supporters, thanks to social media now. It's like you don't leave that space. Now, clearly, Bernie supporters, most of them, are not unhinged like Trump supporters and like to deal in facts, logic, and reason. And because of social media and technology now, you're able to communicate instantly to get that adrenaline rush that you would as going to a Bernie Sanders thing, because you got somebody to agree with you. And that keeps this forward momentum going, and that's something that none of the other campaigns, and including Hillary Clinton's, cannot seem to figure out how to do, because this all, I'm sorry, I believe this.
Well, Hillary's campaigns, obviously based on the news from yesterday, Hillary's campaign is far too busy out there trying to figure out how to secure the endorsement of Henry Kissinger.
Well, yeah. And, yeah.
I mean, is there nobody inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C. who can pen an op-ed for the Washington Post, Dear Hillary, leave that man alone. Dear Hillary, that man is toxic. Dear Hillary, you got to be better than this. I mean, he doesn't have anything to offer. But I'm sorry, I'm running off on my own personal quest. I'm sorry. But you're right, Thomas. I mean, there's any excitement among the Trumpanzees is an excitement that is born of hatred. They're by God going to put people in their place. They're going to show them who's in charge. Damn it.
Well, it's not. It's like what Matthias was saying last time. It's not just hatred. It's equality and equity. They don't have what they thought they had or thought they were going to get, what the 90s
brought. Yeah, but they've never had it.
I know that, and I understand that. But they always thought it was reachable.
It's 12. It's Christmas for an 11-year-old.
Well, exactly.
They just found out that, oh, shit, you know, I hope there's no little people listening, but, you know, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And from then on, the fun stuff goes away at Christmas, and you get useful things like socks and sweaters, and the magic's gone.
Yes.
And the magic is gone, I mean, I'm not even comfortable talking about it in these terms for white America. They just found out that they've been lied to. And now, and what we're seeing in this election cycle is that they want someone to lie to them some more, please.
Now, I have talked to Bob. I have talked to Trump supporters who are Sanders supporters before, who I know personally, and they don't believe that Trump is going to do half the things that he's going to do. But he's not beholden to anybody. Is how they come across to it.
But that's willful disbelief. Of course, he's beholden to people.
But again, there goes that Santa Claus mentality. I can believe in him because I'm ready to believe exactly what he says, just like Bernie Sanders wasn't beholden to anybody. But, I mean, we had a little bit of disbelief, willful disbelief, because clearly he was fucking beholden to Hillary Clinton, because if he didn't endorse her, you know...
Wait, if he didn't endorse her, what?
The Senate stuff would go away. You know, the way they... If you believe those conspiracy theories, let me preface that. I don't.
You know, the man's got tenure. Okay, I mean there's seniority in the very rarefied thin oxygen world of the Senate. Seniority goes a long way.
While that is true, but I will say that you can't disagree that pressure wouldn't be put on him, and that bubble gets burst, and that's why there are so many hurt feelings. But that
requires too many steps. That violates Occam's razor, and it violates Sherlock Holmes too. Okay, the fact of the matter is, and I don't know why people can't just get this. Before he ran, he said, when he announced he was running, he said, and if I don't win, I'm going to support, wait a minute, the devil. Okay? Oh. He said he was going to do that. He did it. He was true to his word. He's not a liar. And yet people are going, huh, what?
But see, that's in the case with Trump. People only want
they're gonna wander off and follow the progressive Palin.
I wonder how many
Jill Stein supporters have ripped their routers out of their homes because of the Wi-Fi that's going to eat their brains.
But Bob, I'm not. I'm using it as an example.
I'm not coming after you.
I just want to be clear because I have been along with you saying that Bernie has been telling the truth from the beginning on what he was due. He telegraphed it in every debate, in every interview, what he was going to do. But when you are in a crowd atmosphere, you only hear the parts of what you want to hear. You're not paying attention to the reality on the ground. And that's why a lot of listeners, you know, would get in our community would get mad at me when I would be like, yeah, no, this is what he said he would do. He's not going to go to, you know, be on the top of the Green Party ticket. That's not going to happen.
Oh, and by the way, I want to touch on this because I ran across it last night. There's still a lot of self-delusion going on out there about the impact of the burners who are going to go off and be pure and support the progressive Palin. They're statistically irrelevant.
I really love that. I'm not nearly as harsh because this is a whole nother discussion and I wasn't harsh
on her either. I actually kind of respected her for a while. Then I found out she's an idiot.
Well, then, yeah. And by the way, I looked into that board that she was on. It really has no power and it's not that important. The thing she was elected to. The one thing that I gave her praise for, I really looked into it and I was, God damn it, Jill Stein.
Well, yeah, and she went to Russia and smooched Putin right between the cheeks on the brown spot. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they have no human rights violations.
Yeah, right. But no, the fact of the matter is that unless the race was 49.8 to 49.8, the Stein voters are statistically meaningless.
You know, and that to me is the sad thing about our political system. I think we disagree on this. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm a believer in third parties, all of them, because I want more voices in the trough.
Well, I do too, Thomas. If we had a system that gave them anything at all,
there you go. We
don't. And the only way you get a system that makes third parties viable is by starting over.
Yes.
You got to get rid of the entire apparatus that we have. And, you know, I mean, that's that's the presidency, that's the House, that's the Senate. I mean, particularly, you know, all that Article One Constitution stuff's got to go so that we can have some proportional parliamentary representation.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. We would have to start over.
And guess what? You go have that constitutional convention, Thomas. You're not going to get proportional representation with the parliament.
You're going to get
full on fascism with a great big loading dose, a bolus dose of oligarchy.
You know, and
brought to you by the Koch brothers. Freedom.
On the side note, I know we got a little off track, and that was my fault. Going back to the audience, because I'm a big believer in this, and I think what we have to do is what you do, what Jeff does, what Jules does, is speak our truth, right? And layer it with facts, because that is the only way, whether our audience and our community, whether our family that we consider community, however we frame it. Some new people might be audience and they turn into family, and that's awesome, which is what I prefer. But we have to be able to.
Yeah, but Thomas, why is that so hard to get across, the idea that because it's only borne out by the entirety of American political history. If you've got two parties, one fades away, another one steps up, it becomes the second party. It's not like there are then three parties.
Because people are,
I mean, it's
not,
it's a really easy concept.
People aren't educated.
They want to. Unicorn.
And you're slaying my unicorn right now, because I would love to see a way to get there. But it's not, I know it's not possible, but that doesn't mean I'm not hopeful. But the best way to do it, and this is what Bernie has been talking about, and, you know, this is not unicorn, is to take over the Democratic Party. You know, and bring in progressives who will challenge the status quo, challenge Hillary Clinton, challenge the corporate Democrats.
We haven't even scratched this, I mean... And I'm not saying you're wrong. We haven't even scratched the surface of it, though, because most of the people and what I want and what you want are pretty much the same thing. We want a progressive party in the United States. Hint: it ain't gonna be the Greens, at least for the next 500,000 years.
Especially after seeing their convention,
I saw a little bit of it, and
my God, it made me.
Did I mention that they've quit carrying my cheap tequila at the liquor store? My $11.50 a liter cheap tequila, it's not there anymore.
Start drinking after it, and I don't drink.
During it was the only no. But I want to make this point, because I've been doing a little learning. I try to keep learning, even though, you know, I'm all, you know, geezery and stuff. I ought to be happy with what I know, goddammit. But I do try to keep learning things, and this goes back to something I was saying a couple of nights ago. And I've confirmed my own hypothesis to my own satisfaction over the last couple of days, last few days. Citizens United was not about necessarily bringing more right wing money in, although that was the ultimate outcome, because the right wing's got a lot more money than our side does. It was about increasing the amount of corporate welfare available to the for-profit media. And yes, they really do budget that stuff every 2 years and every 4 years. The years that there aren't an election are lean years for local TV stations and radio stations and newspapers and internet advertising companies. They really are. They're lean. And so they budget for this stuff and they count on it. And it's big damn money, okay? Now, and the thing is, whether you like it or not, if you ever want to win you're going to have to win in the system as it exists, as opposed to waiting around for, oh, I don't know, the Apocarev or whatever. It ain't going to happen. Because if it ever does all burn down, what comes up out of the ashes is going to be really mean and really hateful, and we'll stomp out little unicorn jockeys for fun. So you gotta have the money to do the stuff, whether it's internet advertising or, I mean, do people think that every part of Bernie's campaign was all just concocted by people with peanut butter and tempeh sandwiches and in their back pockets who were standing around coming up with banner ads while they were playing hacky sack?
Well,
because
not.
It wasn't. Those $5, those $27 at a time, $5 a time contributions bought a shitload of media.
Yeah, and not only did it buy a shitload of media, it bought a lot, you know, respect of progressives who were paying attention, buying votes, but it got access for people to change minds. You know, we went from 6% to 22 states. Remember that?
I mean, Well, I mean, why do you think the greatest success of Bernie's outreach was among people who just happened to be deeply connected into the internet?
Well, because they knew how to target those folks.
Ta-da! And it's somewhat less expensive than traditional TV and radio and newspaper ads.
Yep, exactly.
So if you're going to succeed in that, you've got to have access to the money to do it with. And you know what? The fact of the matter is, let's deal with this real quick, too. For all the talk about how damn dirty the DNC was, and it was, the fact of the matter is, Bernie could not have gone anywhere with his campaign without access to the database that the DNC had.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where those email lists came from. Friend, I'm Bernie Sanders. I'm fighting for the 99%, not the 1%. I don't need $1 million from you. I need 5. Can you give me 5, friend?
Yeah.
And I'm not being cynical. Okay, this is the real world of American politics. I mean, even in just a one crummy little district in anywhere USA, you can't knock on every door. And you don't necessarily want to. There are people you can count on to vote for you. And you really, you know, apart from, you know, hey, great, wonderful, please get out, go vote, you know, thanks for your support. You don't have to convince them. But this is an America where you have to convince enough people to get you to 51%. First, past the post.
Amen.
And that is apparently impossible for some people to comprehend, Thomas. Now, meantime, if you're going to change something, well, it's best to find a structure that exists and build on top of it. I mean, that's human history. Consider the place where what we now understand to be ancient Troy stood. It's a hill in Turkey called Hisarlik. Well, archaeologists think that the historical Troy, if such a thing may be called, was at Troy 7. You know what that means? There's a Troy 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All different settlement layers of the same place being settled year in, year out, century in, century out, millennium in, millennium out, okay? And the reason I've wandered off into the ancient historical weeds is to point out that that societies build on pre-existing structures. Dig into a Mayan temple, you'll find a temple inside it. There's a smaller pyramid, and inside that there's a smaller pyramid until you get down to a pile of dirt. Well, the same thing goes for political parties.
trying to build a third party from the top down is never going to work with the capstone expecting to hang free of gravity in midair. While slowly, maybe someday we'll put some foundation under it. It's never going to work. Never, ever going to work.
And herein lies the thing, right? And I'll let you go. If you want to speak what you know is right and people don't want to hear it, that's on them. But it's you have to have the tools to be able to make the change happen and know how to use those tools. Otherwise, you're just a tool. And frankly, all the oligarchs are going to do is point and laugh because you think this is going to happen in some way that it's not ever happened before. And we'd all love it to happen that way. But that's not the America that was built. And when the rich are getting richer and we're still fucking peasants, I'm sorry, it's going to take more than just Bernie Sanders to make this happen. And it's going to take more than just the goddamn president to make it happen.
Be kind of nice to have a Congress. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, look at the fucking Constitution and what it says about the Congress. And then, you know, call me on my show when I open lines and tell me how I'm wrong. But I'll leave you with that. But I'm so angry with Trump, man. But I was happy to talk to you about the audience. And I love our community. And, you know, we're a family. We disagree. We have a food fight and then we make up. You know, at least.
Well, we shall see. That's how it's been in the past. But I feel like the rule book has just. First, they tore out each individual page has been torn out. Each individual page has been then torn into a million tiny pieces, and then it's been thrown out the window, a page, a million pieces at a time, until nothing's left. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I got nothing to be excited about in this election cycle. I got nothing but fear. Okay, and like I said, fear is a potent motivator. The right wing's genius has been that they've been able to couple fear and hatred, all right? And hatred will take you only so far. Fear and hatred will take you further. It we'll find out by November how much just plain atavistic fear will do toward keeping Trump out of the White House. I don't know. What we've got here is. We've got a contest, Thomas, between fear versus hate.
Yeah, agreed. And that's goes back to my earlier email. Fucking sad. It really is. But, Bob, thank you for the time.
My pleasure, Thomas. You have yourself a good evening.
You too. Bye now. Bye-bye.
And, I mean, I wish the prognosis was better, but it's not. Can we work? Is there stuff we can work on in the interim? Sure. There's lots of stuff that needs to be done. There's lots of ground level grassroots stuff that needs to be done in any given community. There's plenty of hungry people. Even if you're just giving a couple of cans of pork and beans to the food bank, you're doing something. I don't know. By the way, big thanks going out both to Cindy and to Mark. We've started fundraising for the evening. It's 12 minutes before 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And we've got now $160 to go in fundraising for the evening. So maybe we can find a way out of the hole. It remains to be seen. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you very kindly. Let's go check in with Scott in San Diego. What's up, Scott?
How do you do? How's every little thing there, Mr. Bob?
Oh, I'm dandy. How's Punky?
Oh, he's tickety-boo. Tickety-boo. Look it up. For those of you who don't speak Baltimore.
Absolutely.
All right. You left out one of the one of the legs in the unholy milking stool of the way the mind of the electorate is, at least a good chunk of them. You've got fear, you've got anger, and you've got ignorance. Those three things work in combination. It's like an old Anison commercial, a combination of ingredients.
Was that Anison or was that Excedrin?
No, I'm pretty sure it was Anison. God knows I saw that commercial.
Did Anison have the enough caffeine for 17 cups of coffee in it like Excedrin did?
Not quite that much, but I know it was three ingredients because Rosser Reeves, the guy who came up with that campaign and just beat America over the head with it. You couldn't turn on a TV or a radio without that commercial. And I can recite it 50-some years later. Mrs. Johnson, sure you've got a headache, but don't take it out on him. And then the guy in the white lab coat would come out and extol the virtues of
Anison.
Hello,
I'm a scientist.
Anison brings you fast, fast, fast relief. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But those three ingredients are primary in the psyche of the conservative electorate in this country: fear, anger, and ignorance. And no good thing ever came out of that as the motivating factor in anything.
Yeah, well, we've got that to thank for almost two terms of Richard Nixon.
Well, yeah. Is it live or is it Memorex? Who knows more about tape than I? But anyway, but at the risk of sounding as if I'm minimizing, as you were talking in the first hour and Thomas was kicking off the second hour, I got to thinking about it and I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Bunky. What's wrong with you, boy? You're tucking your tail between your legs. You're cowering in extreme fear over the rantings and ravings of people who are dealing with nothing more than illusions, propaganda, or more properly, impropaganda, and you know, the notions that come up from their fever dreams. None of it is based in reality. It's all based.
Yeah, but doesn't everything change? If doesn't everything change, Scott, based on like what went down today? I mean, if Donald Trump has just motivated a bunch of white folks with guns to go out and try to figure out a way to squeeze off a round at a major party's nominee for president, those aren't fevered dreams anymore.
Well, yeah,
that's a terrifying reality. And in point of fact, I think an argument can be made that's the point where you go, nope, okay, the experiment's over.
Okay, I get that. But believe it or not, it's a two-way street. Because just as Pavlov's dogs were predictable to salivate at the sound of the bell, you've got the nut buckets and the Second Amendment freaks wanting to take up arms at the sound of Trump's pronouncements. But on the other hand, you've got all of us who have more than a handful of viable brain cells to bang together who get our panties in a bunch. Now, maybe it's justifiable on our side to be upset when we hear this bullshit, but let's not lose track of the fact that it is, after all, bullshit. It's an illusion. And we're trying to dance and shadow box with that.
Well, at what point, and that's the question I'm asking, Scott, at what point does it stop being an illusion and become that terrifying reality? Where's the break point? Where's the line that we cross? Have we crossed it? Is it behind us? Is it still in front of us? Help me.
Well, I've been around the planet. I've just embarked on my 62nd round trip around the sun. So I've heard a lot of stuff and I've seen a lot of stuff. You know, I give you George Wallace, Bobby Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, Malcolm X, and a host of people that we've never heard of who have been shot down for simply being who they are or thinking what they do. Okay? So, yeah, I'm saying that at any given time, we could cross over the edge and some numbskull is going to break bad. But at the same time, maybe a more proper response is to let them say whatever the hell it is that their fevered dreams are telling them to say, the voices in their head, and say, okay, I got that, and then go on with what we were doing, which is to keep Trump from being elected. And I fall into this trap. God knows, you know from my calls and emails that I fall into the trap of playing the game on their turf according to their rules. It's a very reactionary thing. And more than a few times I've fallen into it, but I tend not to when I stop for a moment, take a deep breath and say, wait a minute, is this a game that I really want to play? Do I want these assholes to dictate my behavior and my response? You know, because, and then they'll cite chapter and verse, you know, the wretched state of things supposedly is because of this and because of that. Well, the better way to go, I think, is for those of us who do have a lick of sense to actually be cause in the matter of what happens next and what the conversation is all about. Because it's all about not reacting. It's about being the prime mover, the main engager of it's that old Zen thing of, you know, imagine or visualize the world that you want to have exist, you know? And maybe it's just a lot of foo-foo unicorn nonsense, but if we can dream up shitty scenarios, we can just as easily dream up and bring into being.
Oh, look, look, Scott, I could cue up John Lennon singing Imagine at most any moment, all right?
I know.
But the first hour of the program this evening was the very dark, nihilistic reality of one presidential candidate playing footsie with the idea of encouraging his followers to bump off the other presidential candidate.
Yeah, and phrasing it in just such a way.
Well, I mean, he didn't even, but Scott, he didn't even phrase it. It wasn't even cute. It wasn't even artful. You know, this isn't the local mob boss coming by and going, nice house you got here. It'd be a pity if you burnt down tomorrow.
Yeah.
This isn't that. Maybe the Second Amendment people can do something about her.
Well,
you know, what?
If
that's artful, then what's artful about it, Scott? What was he saying? Just wing her?
No. I mean,
I'm not yelling at you, but I'm having a problem here.
I know. You and me both, Bob, because I'm telling you, and it's not going to get any better in the next 3 months. If anything, they're going to ratchet it up, and he's going to ratchet it up, you know, and it's, I pray, and I don't pray very often, but I'm putting good vibes and intentions out there that no idiot breaks bad with anyone between now and
election. You're putting a lot of faith in fucking idiots.
Well, there's so many of them, though, Bob. You know, there's...
That's precisely my point.
I know.
And see, understand that, what's that... Who's that jag-off buddy of his? Roger Stone, pal of Alex Jones's. You know, they've already set the scenario because there are... The vote's going to be rigged. It's going to be fixed. Even if we get stomped 99% to 1%, well, you know, that's just going to be proof that we was robbed. And Roger Stone has said, and this is a quote, there will be blood in the streets if Trump doesn't win.
So now the question becomes, is that all in his mind? Or does it have any basis in reality? And I tend to think that it's more about his bluster and bombast and bullshit than it is about any.
No, it was a call to arms, Scott.
No, I don't buy that, Bob. I'm sorry.
He was trying to predicate reality.
Now, look. If all the pissed off people who are gonna go over and vote for Jill Stein got together, they probably couldn't turn over a Volkswagen Beetle. Okay, but we're talking about people who own the majority of some 310 million guns.
Oh, I know.
I mean, if I was the head of the Secret Service, I wouldn't last a week. They'd have to take me down with a Thorazine dart, and the next week I'd be in one of those lovely canvas jackets riding on the walls of a padded room with a purple crayon between my toes. These fuckers are serious, and they're deadly, and they mean it.
Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. If Roger Stone is right and accurate, and there will be blood in the streets, maybe it comes down to a question of quantity. Just how much blood is he saying will be there? Is it revelation?
Well, okay, that's a fair question, because, see, that's the problem. There's already blood in the streets.
Yeah, it's like, how would you
There's
be
blood
able
in
to
Orlando,
kill?
In Tucson, in Aurora, Colorado, in Sandy Hook, you know, Newtown.
I know.
There's blood in the streets in Ferguson and New York and a gated community in Florida. And Baton Rouge, and a suburb of Minneapolis. Blood in the streets. It's already there.
Is it going to be as high as the bridle of a horse that we hear about in Revelation?
I mean,
we've had a lot of shenanigans in elections before, and it hasn't happened yet. I mean, in 68, Nixon. In 60, Nixon was essentially robbed in Texas and in Illinois, and he took the wiser course, you know, live to fight another day. In 2000, Jesus, we all know what happened in 2000, but there wasn't blood in the streets. People were disgruntled. See, this is why I say that maybe what Roger Stone's rhetoric is all about is to make himself feel better and to satisfy some of Trump's true believers, because when push comes to shove, how many of these ignorant bastards are going to pry themselves away from Duck Dynasty long enough to break bad? Now, there's always the chance that one or two of them might do it because they're not wired correctly inside of their noggins. I don't know. And like I say, I don't want to sound like I'm minimizing, but you know, maybe there's a reality check nature to some of the stuff that I'm bringing up. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I kind of hope you're right.
Oh God, me too.
I think that we discount or write off things like this at our potential peril. I mean, I'm not a member of the you-know-who fan club.
I know, me neither.
But I don't, this country does not need to see something like that.
No, that's true, and I'm not writing it off or discounting it. I'm just imploring people to examine the conversation more closely to see what basis in reality does any of it have. Because if bullshit were music, Trump would be a symphonic presentation, the likes of which we've never heard before.
I'd be Mozart, I mean.
I think we can agree on
well,
that.
Well, okay, maybe Wagner, under the circumstances. But,
you know, but I just... I don't think it's...
I'm sorry, Scott, you're not... It ain't a gag, because gags are funny, and this isn't funny anymore.
I know, and I tend to couch things in a whimsical way, because sometimes that's the easiest way to get a point across, is to put it lightly rather than to bludgeon somebody with it. And if nothing else, it's just food for thought and fodder for a conversation. And you do raise excellent points, Bob. I do not discount what you're saying. There's every good reason to think, as unpredictable as this election cycle has been, that Roger Stone could be somewhat more right than he is wrong. And then where are we? I'm not saying we wouldn't survive it, but it would not be pretty. because then you've got to bring in the force of the Army, Navy, Marines, and Air Force to bear on anybody that would attempt to do something like that. And that's when it gets...
Well, see, you can't really do that. You can't really do that under posse comitatus. That's what all those militarized police forces are about.
Well, yeah, you're right about that.
And I don't have my little hat on or anything. If you sit down and you think about this stuff the way I sit down and think about this stuff in the middle of the night, and not to overly personalize this, but I think about it in terms of what is it now versus what's it going to be. I mean, remember, Scott, do you remember when George H.W. Pappy Bush picked Dan Quayle to run with him? And we all went, wow, damn, that's some serious stupid.
Yeah, if we could only have looked ahead.
And we thought, we'll never see his like again. And then 2000, and here comes and here comes dim leader that Mike Malloy calls Raisin Brain.
Yeah.
And we got, we wrecked the economy and everything, but God, maybe there's enough left here for us to build it back. And wow, sure to God, we've learned our lesson. Oh, hello, nominee Trump.
Well, you skipped a step. Don't forget about John McCain's blunder.
Sure. Yeah. And so what we're seeing here is a lowering of the bar to the point where the damn bar is somewhere 15 feet under the ground. And that's how you get Trump. And here's the wise up. 2020. I know. I should be taken out back and given a sound thrashing for this. But what comes next? You know what's in the Republican brain trust? A guy named Ben Sasse in Nebraska, and an absolute five-star freak in Arkansas named Tom Cotton, who is already campaigning.
I tend to think that they know they talk about the South in the 1860s being a lost cause. I think Trump is all that and much worse.
I see people out there, they generally have the "I'm with her" thing for their avatar on Facebook, crap like that. And we're talking here about the death of the Republican Party as we know it. And I'm like, God damn, put down the pipe. No, we're not. They're not going away. They're not going to quit being angry. They're not going to learn the error of their ways. You know, Jesus said, the poor you have always with you. He didn't say the poor what? The poor of spirit, the poor of brain. And that's where we are. There's 40 to 45% of this country that is furious and plans to stay that way.
Oh, well, that makes me think of something you said early in the show about all this dating back to 64 and Barry Goldwater's trouncing at the hands of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Did the GOP then not reform or get its act together for a little while in the wake of that? Or did they just modify what they were up to?
Well, they figured out what would work, and it did, and it does. I mean, you're getting some pushback here. Steve in New York just wrote in all caps, the subject line was, I'm sorry, Bob, but all caps, are you kidding me? How can Scott minimize this like this? How can Scott minimize this like this? These people are fucking crazy.
Well, I'm not. That I said going into it that it wasn't my intention to sound as if I'm minimizing it, but you've got to take... Even in the most serious thing, there's a thing called black humor. You've got to take as lighthearted a approach.
Oh, I understand. No. I understand getting a giggle out of it. I look for them all over the place because it's generally what pulls me from Tuesday to Wednesday, etc.
Well, it does more than that for me. It keeps me relatively sane.
But if you but if you start sitting down and looking at it in the stark and unalloyed terms in which they are defining this situation, well, it's, you know, it's like Malloy says every night, you know, watch your backs. Damn. You know?
Well, what about Roger Stone? There's probably a list somewhere of all of his previous pronouncements, and this is not his first rodeo. What else has he said over the years that didn't come to pass or would cause you to think that what he's saying now is not going to come to pass?
Yeah, I'm just saying
you've got to look more carefully and analyze it to death if you have to, just to get a sense of what's real and what's imaginary.
I mean, the Secret Service are already at such a fever pitch that when a bunch of animal rights activists started chanting at, the devil the other day, three Secret Service operatives rushed up and surrounded her lest the, you know, peaceful animal, anti-animal cruelty people get to her, because they don't know. They don't know where the next threat is coming from.
Well, and we saw that 6 months ago. Trump was somewhere, I think in Ohio maybe, and somebody...
And he about jumped out of his skin.
Oh, God, yeah. God, yeah.
But it's not, it's not our... You know, our side would sit down and give him a good talking to. Right? I mean, in the chat room, David, the Vermont one, said, Bob, this is the cold Civil War in our face. Scott's trying to process this situation like all of us. We all agree with where they're coming from, but it's also blatant now and coming so fast. We need some time, space to process it all. But when? And, you know, that's the million-dollar question, because it's not going to slow down for us to have a chance to go, wow, no, that's real. That one's not. That's real. No, it's not. Hey, Scott, no. I got to roll, though, brother. It's been a good conversation. So, give Punky my regards.
I certainly will once I can get him out of his bunker.
Well, see, it's a smart bird.
They don't call him superior bird brain for nothing.
Exactly. Scott, take
it
easy.
Bye. See you, Bob. Bye-bye.
Scott calling from San Diego. I don't know. I just know I'm deeply uncomfortable. And I'm proud to say that we are down to $60 to go in fundraising this evening. No, Steve, it's okay. Steven, you said sorry for the yelling. No, I get it. It's okay. Got a note here. As a burner, I now find that term to be a pejorative. I'm one who's holding my nose. Voting for her holiness and calling bullshit on Bernie Sanders supporters en masse going to vote for Trump. The numbers are so infinitesimal that the conversation makes me want to puke. Jill Stein became a non-starter when I realized what a fucking whack job she is. And she is that. And, it's statistically irrelevant. I mean, just, you know, go look at 538. And I don't know, I guess the Jill Stein people are going, well, those polls aren't real. Those don't take into the vast majority of people who are going to, you know, Gary Johnson in the popular vote has 8.8% in 538's now cast. That's slightly more than half of what he'd need to get into the debates. Jill Stein, not even showing up in the ratings. So, you know, that tells you something. In the last day, Gary Johnson in the popular vote in the now cast has gone up to 10.2% with 0.6% of the electoral votes. Jill Stein, still statistically irrelevant. Does that tell you something? But Trump apparently got a boost out of North Carolina today. In the nowcast, he's up to 6% as opposed to the devil's 93.9%. I say that you take something like what Trump did today at anything but face value at our potential peril. And I guarantee you, the Secret Service are not treating it like a joke. And were it not for the fact that there's a glitch in Supreme Court law, he might even be chargeable. But he isn't, because the Klan. Maybe we'll have time for that. But right now, let's go over and let's go over to the stress line and check in with Labor Man. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, hanging in there, hanging in there. Yeah, it's interesting times and all. You know, it was a really, really nice rant after, you know, Thomas had checked that email. You know, you hit a lot of things right on the head. But I think Thomas's question was sort of, well, how did we get here? You know, and that's an important question. But the bigger question is, where do we go from here? To me. But I think, you know, what, you know, some of the points that you hit on, you know, if I could just backtrack a little bit and kind of go for a little while here, because I was a part of it. Maybe we've got a lot of young kids out there that aren't aware of it. But if you look at the two parties, you know, and we can go back to whatever day, but I'm going to just go back to my lifetime and my activity, you know, back to the 60s and the 70s. So you had the right wing of the Republican Party back in those days, just a real tiny little sliver of the Republican Party. Today, they're just about ready to take the party over. You know, maybe give them 3-4 more two-year election cycles, they'll probably be the majority of the Republican Party. You just look at the platform.
I mean, don't you think they already own it, Gary?
Huh?
Don't you think they already own it?
No. They're still, you know, they're still mostly corporate Republicans, the corporatists, you know. But they're getting, you know, over the years they've been getting primaried. But if I could just go and backtrack to, you know, the moments for us, the important moments, and how much of a bigger percentage of we, the liberals, okay, were of the Democratic Party back in the 60s and the 70s. We were a much larger percentage than what the righties were in the Republican Party. And you look at all the major groups that were out there, and all these, you know, and they were mostly disparate, separate movements. We were never able to kind of bring them all together. Otherwise, we would have really been effective. But if you look at the civil rights movement, okay, they got legislation passed. Happy days are here, okay. You look at the women's movement. They got legislation passed. Happy days are here. You look at the labor movement. We got legislation passed. The OSHA Act, the Mine Safety Act. Look at the environmental movement. They got legislation passed. And who am I missing here out of the anti-war movement and Vietnam Vets Against the War? And all these things, you know, I played a role in, you know, some a little bit more in one versus the other. But I was active, and, you know, we all felt good about what we did. We actually got things done. Okay. Since that time, okay, let's say the '70s, since that time, it just seems like my generation, and, you know, maybe the next generation, you know, our kids, you know, it's like we just fell asleep, you know. We just went into this, you know, I don't know what kind of state, but we just went to sleep. And so much asleep that we couldn't even get Jimmy Carter reelected. We ended up with Ronald Reagan. He began demonizing the word liberal, and we We ran faster from that fucking word than Usain Bolt can run, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? And we have just been going downhill ever since. While the righties have been just slowly plodding along, okay, recruiting people into the Republican Party, recruiting the people into their churches, and the thing that they have done from going way back, okay, up until now, and something that we haven't been doing at all, is getting elected to office at all levels of government, okay? And that's why we're in a hole. I mean, I don't care how Hillary and the Trump thing looks like or turns out, even if Hillary wins. To me, if Hillary wins, it's going to give us some more buy time, you know what I mean, to try to catch up to these fuckers. Because you look at it now, they got 30 governors, state houses, you know, almost as many, you know, total control of those state legislatures. They're elected at every level of government, county from dog catcher on up. Okay. A lot of judges too, you know, and we got a long way to catch up, you know, and the only option for us is to take over the Democratic Party. You know, I mean, that's all there is, you know, and we had a big chunk of it, but we just, you know, when Reagan came into office, you know, the righties went more to the right and they pulled the Dems with them. You know what I mean? So we just.
Well, at the same time, don't discount the truth of what Lyndon Johnson said when he signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. We have lost South for a generation.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that was a big part of the Democratic majority up until that point.
Yeah, but you know, if you're looking at the South, you didn't have a whole ton of liberalism down South, even in the Democratic Party. For Christ's sakes, it was the Democrats that turned Republican, you know, because they were conservative. You know. So, but I'm talking about the liberal people who were proud to say I was a liberal. And now, you know, we run. You know, Thomas, you know, he says it over progressive, 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 you know. And there's very few people out there who will even say liberal. You know what I mean? Because it was so demonized by Reagan. And then by the end of Reagan, you know, you had the veto of the budget resolution for the federal budget. You know, Reagan sent it back to the Democrats, told them to take out the renewal of the fairness doctrine, and voila, within weeks or a month or something, Rush Limbaugh was born on 400 fucking stations across this country. You know what I mean? None of this is accidental.
Well, and you know, that one particular word, liberal, it doesn't help now that, you know, we have baptized the economic practices that lead to the grinding, you know, the grinding down of what was left of the middle class. By God, what do we call that, Gary? That's neoliberal.
Oh, that's
and you know, that further toxifies the word. And it doesn't mean what liberal means. I mean, it makes me feel some sympathy for our friends in Australia, whose Liberal Party is actually the right-wing Conservative Party, and Labour's their Liberal Party. It's like there's been a deliberate effort to make words not have value. So what do we call ourselves now? I mean, progressive's kind of what they've left us with. And then they demonize that.
What I'm saying, you know, that the middle of the Democratic Party was easily dragged to the right, and the liberals just kind of hid. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you don't want to be that, especially once Limbaugh hit the air, you know, airways, because, I mean, they just absolutely demonized the word, you know, to the point of.
And you know, Gary, a pox on the so-called left's wealth class for letting that happen, because they let it happen. Limbaugh was out there doing all that stuff, and there are very few people pushing back. Malloy was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, starting out, 87, 86 in Atlanta?
Yeah.
One of very few. And
but it's,
you can't win an ideological battle when you're not on the field.
Well, exactly, and you see, you know, especially from day one with Rush Limbaugh, it became a culture war. Okay, I'm sure you remember that term, and that's where pretty much it started. You know, there's a culture war in this country, you know, and it's conservative versus liberal. You know, it's the freedom people and minimal government and big government's the problem. Tax and spend liberals versus conservatives and on and on and on, you know, and it's to a point today where, you know, the Republicans, they just hate Democrats, you know, and I think we're sort of getting into the same mode, you know what I mean? Because, you know, it's almost impossible to talk to them.
Well, it is. But they also figured out and they'll punish people. They'll punish people for reaching across the aisle and compromising, which used to be, we were told, was how things actually happened in Washington, D.C., that people who were ideologically different from one another somehow managed to find a little bit of common ground here and there because they didn't actively, personally hate each other. That no longer obtains. That's a big part of the dysfunction inside the Congress. And that raises the next issue. You know, we get ourselves all tied up in knots over the presidency, but the fact of the matter is, how much different would this, and you know what, you can say it about Clinton too. How much different would Clinton's presidency have been if he had had a Democratic Congress with whom to work? And God knows you can say that about Barack Obama, because during the time that he allegedly had a majority, he didn't even have a majority because it was made up of people like Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln and Joe Manchin.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you know, we need to go out and start getting elected, you know, and I guess there is some notable movement there, the Bernie-crats, there's this other group out there looking to get people, you know, more progressive, liberal people, you know, elected to office and what have you. But, you know, we have to do that, you know. And for them, especially the fundies, you know, the real sliver part of the Republican Party back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, they've just been plotting and you know, they get set back
What they are, Gary, are the shock troops of the right wing, okay? They're the cannon fodder in the culture war. And the right wing will put them up there every time, and they show up and they vote reliably. And frankly, on the Democratic side, we don't have any shock troops.
No, we don't. We used to have the liberals.
We used to have labor.
Well, labor
but,
too.
But you know? Labor has been what? Labor's been cut to pieces. And then what remains of labor, I mean, my God, I mean, we've got an example here in West Virginia. You've got labor unions that are endorsing a hard right-wing member of Congress, a guy named David McKinley. And I mean, they're not just, you know, saying, well, okay, he votes with us. They're digging deep for him. They are actively, the labor unions are actually actively supporting him. When, in point of fact, if he ever gets the opportunity, he'll screw him to the walls.
Yeah, labor lost it when labor failed to respond to Reagan's firing the Petco workers. You know, when labor sat back and did nothing, everybody was concerned about their own turf. You know, ain't our fight. You know, nobody jumped up and did anything, and that's when the conservatives, the corporatists knew they had us by the balls. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been going downhill since Taft-Hartley. You know what I mean? We've been on a downward path. But
just as a statistic, consider this: the Airline Pilots Association, the union for airline pilots. They have given at least $164,500 in PAC money to supporters in Congress of National Right to Work Act. Get that.
Yeah.
What I mean, if you're rank and file, do you not look at them and go, "What are you thinking?" I mean, unions are giving money to people who want to get rid of unions.
I know.
I mean, that's so dysfunctional. I mean, that's hit me again. I can put a little stank on it this time. And I for the life, have they, you know, labor is the, and I'm, this isn't just me wanting to goon on labor. You know, that's not where my heart is. But it's so dysfunctional in light of the fact that, you know, when you get right down to it, labor is the birth mother of all progressive liberal activism in this country. Had the Highlander School not been built for purposes of labor, of teaching labor organization, Dr. King and oh so many others, including Rosa Parks, would have had nowhere to go to learn the tactics that they used to jumpstart the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
Well. And when labor is beat down, then it kind of follows for everybody else because everything arises out of that. I mean, the so-called environmental movement. Oh, please. I mean, about this, no, I know a little bit. You know, where the environmental stuff is concerned.
Yeah.
Day in, day out, ordinary gay folks, how they felt about human rights campaign. Just jumping right out and getting on the Hillary bandwagon when she had so many dodgy positions relative to their issues. You know, there's a profound disconnect between the rank and file of any so-called movement and its very well-paid leadership, Gary.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is the answer is we need to go out and get elected. At any level, you know, people have to get, you know, if you're not elected, you don't have power.
Yeah. I say this at the end of every election cycle. Now is the time to go find your progressive primary candidates because you got to get past the primaries.
Well, yeah, you got to go out
getting pissed off in June when your primary was in March. That's a non-starter. Bitching about who's going to be on the general election ballot in November. Well, hell, if you didn't have anybody to choose from,
You got to start somewhere, start in your precinct, you know, start in your town, start, you know, run for dog catcher, you know, anything. You know, I mean, that's what these folks have been doing, since the 60s, you know, they've been just plodding along, you know. And they've done it by, and I'm going to say this word, you know, and I know it's going to be a corkscrew up, some people's asses. they do it because they are experts, and I don't know if this is a new word here, okay, but I'm going to put an ism to it. They do it by incrementalism. That's how they've been doing it. That's what works. And that's what Bernie is for you Bernie people out there. That's what Bernie has been his entire political career.
Get what you can, where you can, how you can.
He's been a plotter. You know what I mean? He's the essence of a plotter, especially being an independent, you know, his entire political career. So, you know, he just slides along, shows up for work every day, and tries to get what he can done. You know, so, and we have to do that, and that's just what the righties, you know, the model is out there. The perfect model is out there. You know what I mean? We could see, like I say, Bob, you know, the real righties, you know, including the fundies, you know, they're about to take over the Republican Party. And, you know, if they get back in power, and then righties get in there, you know, I'm a firm believer in these guys, like, you know, maybe, I don't know what Pence's religious bent is or whatever, but I mean, some of these folks.
No, well, I mean, the answer to that is he's a hardcore evangelical.
Yeah. Well, but some of these, right, they want to get to the White House to push the fucking button. That's the goal. That's their goal. Push that fucking button, you know.
Bring Jesus back now.
Armageddon, you know, bring it on.
Because, see, they're going to be okay because Jesus is going to come back and rapture them up, and the rest of us poor schlubs are going to be sitting here counting mushroom clouds,
yeah,
Gary.
They don't care. They don't care. Ring Armageddon. Jeebus will come back and help them whoop the Ruskies and the Chinamen, the heathens, and
onward and Christian on and on soldiers, and on. Damn it, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they've been marching, you know, and they've been set back over the years with you know, maybe a governor vetoing some legislation or maybe a court ruling, you know, and they just keep plotting and you know, filing lawsuits. Look at all the fucking lawsuits these people file. Ridiculous laws they pass and file lawsuits after lawsuits. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Same old shit, you know. They're just, they're relentless, you know. They're relentless.
They are relentless. It's like having piss ants in your house. You kill them and kill them and you kill them and you kill them, and you've still got more piss ants in your house.
Yeah. Can't get rid of them, you know. So okay. we got to outnumber them in office, you know. That's the only answer.
And hopefully Bernie will keep that going, keep the momentum going. Maybe Bernie can light a fire in 2018 in the midterms, because that was part of it all along. If he could have won the nomination, if he could have won the presidency, the next goal was going to be to get a Congress in 2018. And he wasn't bashful about that. And, I had a note from Steve in New York earlier saying, part of the problem is that, he said, Laborman's dead on. You know who set this up like this? Bill Clinton. During his tenure, he demonstrated a concern for himself and only himself. The Democratic losses at the state and local levels were decimating and severe. We haven't recovered. Do you see Hillary Clinton having any big coattails for 2018? It's going to, changing the Congress is going to have to be its own self-contained movement.
Yeah, okay. You got the, let's see, the Bernie-crats network. Okay, so that's sort of up and running, okay? And then you got this other group, which are a spinoff from with some of Bernie's people, apparently, called Brand New Congress. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Huh?
No.
Have you?
No.
Okay, let me go ahead and try to copy this link and put it in the chat. For
okay, or shoot it to me as an email, whatever. Yeah.
This is for you know, getting people elected to anything. You know what I mean? So they're not saying, you know, do it as a Democrat or do it as a Republican or do it as an independent. You know, just sort of you know do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, get out there. So it's pretty interesting. I haven't gone through it in a lot of detail. Let me see if I can.
Okay. Well, I'll watch for it to pop.
I'll put this one, Brand New Congress. I'll post the link in the chat.
Okay. Good deal.
Okay.
All right.
Let me let you go. Get somebody else on here.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Gary. Take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Our buddy Laborman Gary calling from New Mexico, and. Part of sorting out the problem is understanding what the problem was and how it happened. And I've got this theory that says that part of our problem is the dying off of the generation that understood what FDR style Democratic Party politics were all about. Because they're gone now. That's for all intents and purposes, that is no longer a living memory. That's not anything that can. That's not anything that can be directly accessed or leveraged now. And let me add some thanks out there. We are down to $10 to go. Thank you very kindly, Rusty, for jumping in. Thank you very much, Rusty. Rusty sent a note earlier. And subject line, wine rebate. Just got my wine rebate from Warehouse of Vino. It's all yours, $50 American. Check in the mail. And I didn't mention that, but if you want to use the U.S. Postal Service, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And back to the stress line. Is that you, Mark, in Florida?
Yes, Bob, it is me. Are you reading me pretty clear?
5x5.
10-4. I for some reason, am not, but I'm able to. In case, Bob, I just wanted to say that, your interpretation of the circumstances with tonight's threat is what we've all been talking about for the last, I'd say, 2 or 3 years. This comment today, you can see the Million Man March, where they were going to march with their rifles in Washington, D.C., led by some of the Iraq War veterans, the Tea Party movement, all of these things, are led up to this election. They've had this election in the works, and that the Stone fella and Paul Manafort, these operators, Stone is a ruthless murderer. And, literally, I think he's tied in with some high level crimes. And, Paul Manafort, he worked with Yanukovych and Putin, as a political consultant. And actually, I think he ended up ripping them off. But, and now they're, and no surprise to yourself, but, Trump has borrowed money from Putin. I don't know, it's into the hundreds of millions of dollars, but, the thing, I think your interpretation would be like mine. Though I'm not a native to the South, I've spent much of my adult life in the South, and I've developed the same intuitions, because I have peace in my heart, but I've developed the same intuitions that you have, Bob, because of those foundations and our backgrounds and our lives and proximity and age. And I think the threat is not a joke. I think it's intentional. I think it's designed. And I think it's a culmination of all of these movements. And living in the South, and I'm not criticizing the man that calls it with the bird from California, his interpretation, California is a more staid, economically balanced, uniform type society. It's just, hey guys, girls, California is just, it's just different economically, socially. And if you act kooky there, everybody knows you're kooky. I just think we see more radicalism in other parts of the country, and we can start with here in the South. And, that's what we have Alabama San and all of these things are very real, and the proliferation of weapons. This is very real. And, just tonight, before I even listened to the show, I made a trip here not too far from where I live, Bob. South, about halfway to Orlando, down to an area called the Villages. And I saw things on people's trucks, young people, that were very dramatic. The Tea Party flags and stuff. This is all new stuff, not worn out, brown and dirty stuff. And, these people are hyped up here. And then I get down to the Villages, Bob, where Sarah Palin makes her big show. And, there's just Trump signs everywhere. It's the other side is hyped up, and I don't make a joke about it. And I'll hang up and listen to your call. To your comments, because of the I think you have Cleaner on the radio. But Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman that was shot, we don't know what her shooter really was thinking and saying. Quickly the right wing puts out that he was a registered Democrat and a liberal. And in fact, that's disinformation done intentionally. And they clean up their Facebook things. They get them out of there rather quickly. So, it doesn't take much for an imbalanced person to do a whole lot of damage. And you and I both are old enough to have seen a number of people, get shot in this country that have tried to step up and be leaders. So, I don't think any of it's a joke. I'm not saying the man from California said it was, but I don't think that it's also a joke with, that the blood would be as deep as the shoulder of a horse. But, we are in contentious times. Trump has threatened North Korea. He's threatened Iran. Now he's threatened an American running for president. So he needs to be stopped. And, I'll hang up and listen, Bob. But, I take the same intuitions that you do. And I think they're very serious, circumstances. And it wouldn't take much for people to flow out into the streets, and it immediately would be a race a race hatred war, and which would have nothing to do with anything. But that's right where they've always wanted to go. So,
well, sadly, I agree with your analysis, Mark. I'm sorry you're having a hard time hearing me, but I do. I agree with your analysis, and you're in a place where you're seeing it in a much more stark fashion. We're less populous up here, but you know, this state is probably the third most Trumpy state in the union, and that's frightening. So you're seeing it pressed down and shaken together. If we're going to keep working these biblical analogies,
In 1999 and 2000, Bob, when Bush stole the election, and having, you know, a deep affinity towards my stance with labor and opposed to the Iraq War, which was right around the corner, I actually was a bit like this already in the Marine Corps, in both tours of my duty. I was just kind of a counterculture dude in a uniform that looked rather compliant and acted compliant, but there was a bit of rebel in me the whole time, so to speak. But and I put a lot of heat on my officers to try to jump out in front of us to lead Marines. I mean, that was my job as an enlisted Marine, is to if you weren't cool, not as in trying to be groovy and get along with the men, which will end up with weak results, but just try to be authoritarian. I would have a way of a busting a cap in your ass. I would have a way of breaking you if I had to, and I did. I got a couple commissions from Marine Corps officers. So it took a while. One case took a couple years, and took some people getting killed. But you know, he became a civilian before I did, and he threatened me physically on a ship one time. But it's not about me. But the point is, that was my job, and with that in my nature, when Bush stole the election, I said, I just kind of make a public statement. So I went to the judicial building where I live, and there was a rather tall Confederate statue, and you know, and I have a child growing up in the area at the time, and I said, you know, I'm tired of looking at these symbols. And actually, they have a veterans park here where I'm at, and they list the Confederate dead in the battles as well as some Northern battles. I've never seen that anywhere else in the United States, and I would never dream to damage something in Vicksburg or Chattanooga or Chickamauga or Kennesaw or anywhere else. And that's not where I'm going with what I did. But because of the stealing of the election taking place here in Florida and the Confederacy rising at that time in their minds, and I witnessed much of this. It wasn't imaginary. I saw what I saw with the flags and the people. And this is one of the few places where the Confederate flag just within the last few months quietly went away. But they still have it in they moved it to outside, but near some kind of public, some other thing was actually on government property. But I spray painted the word A period Lincoln over the word Confederate, that statue. And I'm like I've mentioned before, I'm a good sized guy, but I had to reach up on my toes. And then I said, well, the sheriff, hadn't come out of the building yet. They have, you know, uniformed people guarding the lobby, but I was doing it to where if a person saw me, they would see me, and I didn't want to be seen, but I wasn't in any case. So, then I said, well, then I put Martin Luther King in about 24-inch letters, MLK. And I said, well, I'm not arrested yet. So I said, fuck it, I put JFK underneath it. And the retired off-duty sheriff did get lucky when he came out. He hit me with, you know, hey, boy, come here, boy. And I said, motherfucker, boy. I was a motherfucking squad leader at age 19 in the Marine Corps in the 70s. And you're calling me boy, motherfucker? You know, but in my mind, that's just, you know, nobody's a boy in my life, and if anybody can boy somebody, I guess I could boy somebody, but it's not in my nature. But the point is, I don't care for that part of the aspect of this culture. In any case, I decided, he said, you need to come back here. I said, I'll be right back, and I never did go back. But as I walked away, Bob, at a quicker pace, he got lucky and flagged down a squad car that was passing by, and they pulled up next to me as I was now moving into a slow jog, which is an all-out race for me. And they said, you need to stop. We need to talk to you. And I said, hey, you got to earn your check tonight. They're literally rolling right next to me, Bob, in downtown next to a fucking bank. I said, you're going to have to earn your check tonight. And I made them chase me. And they did chase me. And they caught me on the other side of town. But I guess the point is, when I went to the, the court and face the judge. She said, call my name, and then she said, is there anything you'd like to say to the court? And I said, well, ma'am, no offense towards yourself, but had the South prevailed in the American Civil War, would you have immigrated here? She was a Puerto Rican of Spanish descent, and I didn't mean any disrespect towards her.
No, of course not.
Right, and I just, you know, that was the point of my comment. And she said she made some kind of comment that wasn't very very sophisticated or very endorsing of my my hostility. But nonetheless, she said fine, and then she, you know, slammed the gavel and cost me $1,300. But in the long run, and then $250 in court costs. But in the long run, that statue is no longer there. They moved it. It's gone. So, and now there was, we took down some other Confederate emblems here that I had physically removed prior to their official removals. I'll just leave it at that. So, any case, I don't hate anybody. I just hate hatred, and I hate a reason for having hatred. And these threats that will play tonight, specifically in North Carolina. I wanted to just close with saying one thing. I wonder if you wouldn't agree with me, but I think that Stone or Manafort or his people are telling him what to say. He listens to them. They rehearse it. Then he goes back over it again, and he goes out and he gets it partially wrong. I think he's trying to say what they're wanting to say from an agitative standpoint, but he doesn't quite get the nuance. He doesn't quite. They could be telling him to say it as stupid as he spits things out. But when you threaten North Korea, and you threaten Iran, and you threaten Hillary Rodham Clinton, an American candidate for president, you're really over the top, and you don't know Crimea's in Ukraine. I have to agree with all these former CIA people, even though I was just an enlisted Marine. I have to say that they're pretty sharp. So, Bob, I'll hang up and listen. I've got a bad signal with you. But.
All right, you take care, Mark. It's good hearing from you, my friend, and thanks for helping out this evening.
Yes, and tell your family hi for my sake, please. Bye.
I sure will. Later. My buddy Mark, calling from Florida. What he brings up about the Trump just kind of screwing up the messaging. I got tagged in a post earlier today by our buddy Joy in Michigan, and it was to a video that I found funny and frightening at the same time. And it comes from, I think, Cracked, C-R-A-C-K-E-D, Cracked.com. And the upshot of it was that Trump's candidacy was all an elaborate prank gone wrong. You can find it over at Cracked.com. And it's funny, but it's chilling. And it posits something very similar to what Mark is describing. Something that gets completely out of control. In a way, because, you know, I can never resist a cinematic analogy. It's like, you know, many, many film critics will say that Citizen Kane was the most profound. The best film ever made. It's in the top 10, if not the top five, of a whole bunch of film lists. And it chronicles the rise of a megalomaniacal millionaire, I guess, at the time, Charles Foster Kane. And his press toward power, and of course it's got some reference points to William Randolph Hearst. Some of it's not particularly thinly veiled. And the movie is what the movie is, and it is brilliant. Rosebud. But watching this piece from Cracked that Joy sent me, I was struck by, it's almost like the Trump campaign is Citizen Kane with a third grade vocabulary
and a 79 IQ. But now he's one of two people that has a chance to be president. And when that happens, suddenly you start thinking about, yeah, I could be president. And there's nobody in the Republican Party who can tell him, yeah, Donald, keep thinking about the rabbits. They got this ex-CIA Mormon dude who's going to run an independent, and you know, maybe he can between him and Gary Johnson, they can take Utah away from him. But I'm not gonna rest easy until the morning after the election. And even if Trump is not going to be the next president, I'm still not going to be resting easy. Because from an activist standpoint, there's going to be a ton of work to do. Because as sure as God made little green apples, and if you sit up in the tree and eat a belly full of them, you'll get the bellyache and the runs. We know what
the devil.
We know what her politics really are. Any pivot, it will be to the right. And she will have to be dragged kicking and screaming back to the center or center left if that's even possible. There's an old joke out there whose punchline goes, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. I don't think there's even a coffee break in this scenario. It's all just us on our heads. So take it as seriously as you wish or don't. But the stakes are high. The consequence is grave. And I can't help the distinct sensation that in the last day or so, we have passed a truly watershed moment in this campaign cycle. And it may be, you know, it may be a signpost crudely painted with "this way lies madness" toward our future. I go back to what I said earlier. Dan Quayle, well, he's an idiot. That's an anomaly. George Bush, well, okay. So, you know, everybody does that once. All right, twice. Who? Sarah, who? Oh, hell. Oh, she read it all and she can see Russia from her house. Eddie Munster? Really? Eddie Munster? And he's a smart one? Now this. Yeah, peep into your little political telescope and look down the road a little bit. It doesn't get any better. There aren't any... All this media hand-wringing about, you know, when the grown-ups are going to take over the Republican Party again. There aren't any left. They're gone. I mean, Romney? Look, just because he knows which fork to use on the shrimp doesn't mean that he didn't spend his life screwing working people and talking about how good for America it was that he did it. There are no good Republicans left. Every 4 years, there's going to be a chance that this country puts someone in the Oval Office who will continue the process of dismantling what little bit is left of representative self-government. And that's what's at stake, at least from where I stand. So tomorrow is prayer meeting Wednesday, of course. You know, there is that big bucket of blackberries in there in the bottom of the fellowship hall refrigerator. Already had the sugar put to them and everything. Oh, the syrup's good. The syrup's good. The bowl of desiccated butter mints has been replenished. Stay out of them. And we'll just see how it all pans out tomorrow, because from where I stand, we've got a lot to work with. But we always do, don't we? Thanks to everybody, all of you, who helped keep this program going night in and night out. Not just tonight, not just last night, but every night. For God knows, more than 10 years. Thank you. It's pretty amazing when you consider that you do that with absolutely no help from the liberal wealth class. It's stunning. And I thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net. Busy tonight down in Charleston. Good night, y'all.